Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour, September 17th, 2020. This is a very interesting show because for 20 years, basically, literally, I've been doing this radio show at the same time slot from WWCR, which is Worldwide Christian Radio, and I've been addressing families and family topics and education and talking about the death of education in the country. And while the rest of the world is advancing in education, the United States was floundering because of a severe virus that was in our schools. And I'm not talking about COVID-19. This started decades ago where liberal dementia started working its way into the education system. And once one of these things gets rolling, it's like it feeds on itself. And people who are not in line with this tend to just get out of it and go find a different job, etc. But the bottom line is my radio show has been dedicated to bringing information to you, the public, with a concentration on youth and families. And now more than ever, there's an incredible need for support for families who've been dumped on and now have their children at home. Most parents are not equipped to run homeschools. Let's just face it. They have talents in other directions. They're busy in other directions. So all of a sudden, to have all of the families in the United States homeschooling, and then also, I'll be honest with you, what I've seen, this remote learning is going to be a disaster. It already is a disaster. It does not substitute having a real teacher in the classroom. And moreover, I've been around education my whole life, both sides of the desk. I spent 10 years of my life teaching in a university level, math, physics, computer science, astronomy. And I even had a year where I taught high school when I was right out of college instead of going to grad school. I went to a foreign country and just to get away, and before I came back and went to grad school and got my advanced degree in physics. And that was an eye-opener. And what I learned also is that the people that just went on and got their, continued their education, they never ever got out of the educational system. And so they don't know anything about the real world. So imagine somebody who, say, went to college, they got good grades, they went to grad school, they got good grades, they got their degree, they get their first postdoc. About that point, they're probably getting married, starting to have their first kids. They don't know anything about the real world. They don't know anything about science. They don't know anything about corruption in science. They all they know is how to answer from a textbook. And I've seen these people at conferences. They just look like babes out of the cradle. They're just so naive, and they think they're smart, and they're all bright and shiny because they got their new PhD, and they don't know a thing. They're ignorant. They're book learning, smart, real world ignorant. And so then these people go on to, say, get a postdoc where they teach a class in a university. And they don't know anything. So anyway, it just goes on and on. So then they get their first job as a tenure track professor, and they go on. And they never have ever been out of this little cradle called the university system. So, and then you mix in with literally atheist communism, mix it into the, blend it into the culture, and what you get are these, they're just like, there are people that have no clue. They live in the ivory tower is the perfect word for it. So they don't know how to analyze what's going on in the real world. They live in this kind of la-la world that everything is rosy and everything should be a certain way. They've never run a business. They've never had to manage a budget. They've never worked for a paycheck. They've simply been given money. And they learn, what they did learn is how to manage on the amount of money that they get through whatever they were on. When they were grad students, they lived at a pauper's level. When they got their postdoc, they lived at advanced pauper level. And when they got their first position in a university, they lived at a meager level and then worked up to the point where, you know, always making ends meet. But never, ever going out and really running a business where they had to have a bottom line and actually produce a product. They've never produced a product. So this is our education system in a nutshell. I could go on and on. But the end result is then all of this collapses because of COVID-19. The teachers are afraid they're going to get COVID-19. So they shut the whole place down. And mainly it's because the schools are worried about getting lawsuits against them. If somebody gets sick, then the union is going to sue them. So they in the legalized world, the litigious world of the United States, the schools just, universities just could not remain open. So they're all closed. All the kids are at home. And here the parents are going, what do we do? Now, you can get reading, writing, arithmetic, the three R's as they call them. Only one of those begins with R, by the way, just to give you a clue about how bad education is. And then they got the Common Core education, which means literally that everybody has to learn exactly the same thing, and nobody can learn anything more than that either. By the way, if a teacher in Common Core teaches something outside the curriculum, they can be fired. So Common Core not only means everybody learns the same thing, but it also means nobody can learn anything more than what's in the curriculum. It's against the law. Okay, so this is the state of education, but let's concentrate on science. Oh my goodness. The science is so badly distorted and out of place that it just is absolutely insane. So that's why I developed my education program for homeschoolers, and that's available on my webpage. I talked to a grandmother. A grandmother got a hold of me. She heard me in an interview one night, I don't know where, I was a guest on a radio show. And so she called in, they got my, gave her my number or something, and somehow she got a hold of me. And I talked to her on the phone, and she said, oh my goodness, thank goodness. I was trying to find out what I can do for my grandchildren. And because all of a sudden her kids, the parents of the kids, the parents of the grandchildren, are at home and they're just like bewildered. They're like overwhelmed with this idea of educating their kids. And also it takes away a tremendous amount of energy out of the family to concentrate on this education and do all the things that you need. But science is the worst. Science is probably where most parents need the most help. And so, anyway, the point of this discussion is that I'm going to spend a good deal of my showtime from now on dealing with parents and students, K-12 and university, talking about just the real world. Okay. So part of that is that you have to understand the massive amount of misinformation that's being thrown at you. So part of my show for 20 years has been dealing with just disinformation, because this is going on all the time. So to become educated in this world, students have to learn this. They have to learn correct logic and reasoning. And you do this because disinformation programs are not logical. They don't make any sense. But if you learn to recognize them, then all of a sudden, okay, they want a certain effect. They you know, like the news media supporting the rioters, for example, burning down cities. Well, the end effect is they want to sway the election that's coming up. And so that's kind of a civics lesson in itself. And you can see where it's happening. It's all in cities where the mayor, the city council, they entice the rioters to come, and then when they come and start burning everything down, the rioters are told, you just do whatever you want, nobody's going to stop you, the police are not going to stop you, you just scream and burn and do whatever you want. So they just get away with literally murder and then go away without any cause at all, any repercussions. Okay, so you have to learn to identify misinformation and go to its root source. Who's doing this? Who's paying for this? Who's going to benefit by the U.S. going into total disorder? Okay, and then the second thing is you have to replace it with the truth. And so that's something else that I'll be concentrating on. So whenever you listen to my discussions, look for that those two things, eradicating the misinformation and replacing it with the truth. And once you get to learn this process, then you'll start to do it. So if you ever get in a situation where you go in and some teacher's trying to tell you something, you go, oh, wait a minute. You know, you're full of baloney, teacher, because this is the way it really is. Let's just take a little look at history, for example. If you go back into history, the way they're teaching history and the origin of man, for example, it couldn't possibly be true that in 7,000 years, people somehow changed from monkeys to people in Mesopotamia, and all of a sudden we have, you know, cities with 300 million people in them, in China. Okay, so with that brief introduction, I'm going to jump into the topics here. But what I encourage, if you know people that are struggling with home education, turn them in to this show, because I will be dealing, and I think I'm the only show that does. First of all, as far as I'm aware, I'm the only radio show that's been running, like, for 20 years at least. But I'm the only radio show that deals specifically with science. It's just not a popular topic. But then also dealing with families and home education and homeschooling and also Christian values. You know, I'll be honest with you, the death of science occurred when they introduced basically atheist science. Make no mistake about it, the Big Bang and Darwinian evolution are atheist science. And what do? They replace the idea that all this, that we're living in here, is a divine plan. There's a plan here. It's very complicated and it's very real. And what they basically do is they say, no, everything that's going on is just random. It's just by chance. Like this one guy said, it was the other day, I don't know where that I heard this, but a guy said it's like you took a tornado into a junkyard, and the tornado just sat there for a couple of days and spun and spun and spun, and all of a sudden the tornado goes away and you have a brand new Mercedes-Benz sitting there. That's the probability that evolution works is about the same probability of that happening. It's absurd. So there's a plan here, and everything you see going on is working according to a plan, and science, real science that examines the world for what it is compatible with this, what we're seeing. You go back to the ancient people, they all recognized this. But here's what I've noticed too, is if you go to the universities, the professors there are so intelligent that they don't need a divine creator. They don't need a plan. They're so smart that all this just happened all by itself, the Big Bang, and then Darwin evolution, and all of a sudden you got people walking around. What's the problem with that? Well, I can tell you there's a lot of problems. Okay, so anyway, on to the first topic here. I get a newsletter, and one of my fans sends in a newsletter regularly from the airline industry. And this is something that, in fact, on 9/11, this is on 9/11, 19th anniversary of the crash of the Twin Trade Towers in New York, which we all know is a inside job. But this is what the announcement was for the airline industry on September 11th this year, just a week ago here. Cargo planes all over the world are being commissioned to deliver as aid, not as a cargo, but as aid, 7.8 billion vaccinations for COVID-19. Now, if you haven't noticed, a lot of people, including very important people, including doctors, etc., are coming out and just basically saying, no, do not take the vaccination. Don't get tested for COVID-19 because the test itself might contaminate you. And for sure, the test doesn't even work. But at any rate, 7.8 billion vaccinations already to be shipped out. And I said this in February when all this started. I said, all this is planned. They already got the vaccinations already made and packaged. You know, you don't make 7.8 billion vaccinations in an afternoon or in a couple weeks even, or even in a couple months. This thing has been planned forever. There's a great video that somebody sent me, and it showed kids, teaching the kids to just say no. Somebody at school wants to pressure you, oh, little Johnny, little Susie, you need your vaccinations, or we're not going to let you go to school. Well, that would be a no. Don't let anybody, kids, stick a needle in you. That is your right. Don't let anybody pressure you because, by the way, the principal of your school gets a bonus if they get everybody to be vaccinated. That's why it's going on. That's why the principal is very interested, because that principal is getting a bonus if everybody or high percentage of people are vaccinated. So just say no and teach the kids how to say no. Okay. There's a major storm moving into Louisiana again. This is there was Hurricane Laura a couple weeks ago, which, as I noted at the time, was a designer storm, literally designed and fortified with laser satellite technology to draw it in, to increase its wind speed and increase the amount of water that it would dump. It came in between the on the border between Louisiana and Texas, and directly into Arkansas, where it dumped tremendous amount of water. Now we have another storm, which is again a designer storm. It's called Sally, Hurricane Sally. I'm going to make a note here. That's coming in east of New Orleans on the Gulf Coast and being brought in. And it's also going to then go inland and remarkably is going to Arkansas, which is west. Now, I want you to get out a map and take a look at where Arkansas is. When hurricanes come in the Gulf Coast, this would be between Florida and Louisiana. This is where this hurricane is coming in. And typically, in a standard direction would be for it to go north and then east, not west across two states all the way over to Arkansas. And the reason they're bringing us into Arkansas to dump 30 inches of rain is to finally do the final destruction of the U.S. rice crop. I talked about this a number of weeks ago. And how are they doing this? They use laser satellites. There's the military deep state. Who is doing this? It's the deep state military in the United States. And I've talked about this for actually decades, about this process that was developed to turn hurricanes away from land. And lo and behold, here we have five hurricanes being developed right now in the Atlantic, something that the news media is actually mislabeling. They said this has not occurred since 1976. No, it occurred in 1999, something that I was able to predict because of a comet called Comet Lee. There was part of an electrical connection between Earth and other planets, and I made a prediction in May that on September, I believe it was 6th, 1999, there would be major storm activity, and in fact, there was. You can read about that in my books. The issue of weather manipulation being used to affect the food production in the United States. This is the second controlled storm in the same number of weeks. Okay, just quickly, a number of months ago, I started talking about NASA and NOAA combining efforts to create a false flag. Now, what's a false flag? A false flag is an event which is staged to produce an effect, like 9/11 was a false flag. There have been many other ones, but the idea is that this is all programmed, the news media is programmed, and something happens, and all of a sudden everybody's COVID-19 was a false flag. It was a planned event. But at any rate, I predicted many months ago that NASA and NOAA is the National Weather Service, would be involved in this coming up just prior to the election in a false flag, either dealing with a solar flare or asteroids coming into Earth or other events from space potentially that then might affect weather, which would then shut down grid systems. In other words, the electric power would go down in certain areas. So this, I've been keeping track of these fake stories that they put out. And this just came out yesterday. This was in space.com. It was their second running headline, the second headline in their webpage yesterday. It says, two asteroids safely buzzed Earth today. This is yesterday. And let me tell you something. Dozens of asteroids come by Earth every day. Dozens of them. You can go on the lists and you can see what the date and what the date of passage and the distance away, usually given in lunar distances. And so this is not some kind of news event. This is not something you would even talk about because it happens every day. It would be like saying, somebody bought a McDonald's hamburger today. That's not news. So, you know, people buy McDonald's hamburgers every day, so it's not news. So two asteroids flying safely by Earth today is not news. It's not worthy of news. It's certainly not worthy of being a second headline. But what are they doing? They're priming the pump, getting the public ready, because a story like this will then be picked up by other news feeds and propagated. You'll find it appearing all over on news releases, on evening news, etc. And the idea is that they want to prime the pump so the public it's kind of like producing fear a little bit at a time. And this has been going on. So I just want to announce that in my ongoing following of this story. Now, the following story is about a radio telescope that is located in Puerto Rico. It's up in the mountains. I've been to this site, and it's an immense, I believe it's the largest radio telescope in the world, at least it was at one time. And it's used for looking at galaxies and distant part of the universe. It's also used for searching for aliens, which is a NASA program. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, how the official search for aliens is under a NASA program. But there are other private searches for aliens which have borne far more fruit. And so it's like NASA is looking for aliens but looking in all the wrong places. But interestingly enough, about a month ago, all of a sudden one of the big cables snapped. And you can go look at this. So if you want to do an internet search, especially for students, take a look at this. It's the Arecibo. It's spelled Arecibo. Arecibo telescope. Arecibo, Puerto Rico. And I'm sure you can find pictures of it smashed because a cable broke and came crashing down. And these are big, strong cables to hold up this aluminum plating that makes up the telescope. So this is a very bizarre incident, and they can't figure out why this happened. It's almost like somebody caused it, and that's the implication here. So a major research tool being used for all kinds of radio astronomy all of a sudden is destroyed overnight. So what were they looking at? What were they about to see? What was going on here? And who would go out and in the middle of the night snip a cable so that it came crashing down and destroy this facility? Well, I'll see if I can keep following that topic here in coming weeks, if there's any more information on that. Another topic here, a friend of mine, Mark Gaffney, his name is Mark Gaffney. He's a traveler. He's a person who's been very interested in, he's followed my work over many year period. And he just wrote a book, and I communicated with him over the past year as he wrote this book and giving suggestions, etc. But the name of the book, and it's, as I understand, it's going to be on Amazon in Kindle form, Kindle book form, in a couple of days. I don't know the exact day that it will appear, but I would highly recommend reading this book. It's called Deep History and the Ages of Man. And Mark has done a tremendous benefit of researching something that has been researched bits and pieces, something that I had a hand in decades ago when I was in Mexico in Quintana Roo and down in southeastern Mexico, surveying on the ground the Mayan ruins with survey equipment, with people helping me out, etc. And what I discovered is that the grid work that these ancient cities were built on was different than the north, south, east, west grid work that we use today. In fact, it turned out that Chichen Itza was on a 13.5 degree misalignment with the current north, south direction, what we call the cardinal directions. And so this was very curious. But what Mark did is he took things like mollusks that live in a very set tropical zone. And all of a sudden, they moved. And this is back in history, and looking at the planet Earth and the history of planet Earth. All of a sudden, these mollusks who were living in this specific tropical zone with specific temperature, very strict temperature tolerance. Now, if you've ever had, say, tropical fish in a fish bowl or in a fish aquarium in your house or at the office or whatever, you'll know that they have a very narrow width of temperature that they live in. If it gets colder, they die. If it gets warmer, they die. So you have to keep that temperature exactly right. And so this is what happened with the mollusks, that they encountered a change in temperature where they were. So they had to literally move to a new location. And so this is well known, but there was no explanation for this. But so what Mark has figured out is not only due to ancient architecture of buildings, of ancient societies, etc., but other natural phenomenon, that the old North Pole was in a different place than the current North Pole. This, we're talking not about magnetic North Pole. And in my work, I talk about the difference between magnetic North Pole and celestial North Pole. The celestial North Pole is based on the spin axis of the Earth, and the magnetic pole is based on where the North Pole of Earth is when you take a compass and make a measurement. So at any rate, I suggest you get this book, a very good book, and I watched it go together piece by piece, and now it's being released by Mark Gaffney, that's G-A-F-F-N-E-Y, and Deep History and the Ages of Man. And by the way, if you're, say, a student and listening to this show and you go, oh, I didn't get that down, my show is always archived on my webpage for free. This is a commercial-free radio show. I pay for my own airtime. I don't have sponsors. I pay for the airtime out of products that people buy on my webpage. And so the archives for all these shows are for free on my webpage. And so there's a link there, so you can go back in another day after the show airs. After you listen to this, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Go to that webpage, scroll down, and you'll find a link to my radio shows. You can click on the date, and it'll bring up this radio show, and you can listen to it again. Okay, so Mark's book, I highly recommend. Once again, it's called, this is on Amazon, not on my site. I don't sell it on my site. But it'll be on Amazon, Deep History and the Ages of Man. Okay, last night, or two nights ago, I believe, Tucker Carlson, who I like as a host, he's one of the better of the mainstream cable news Network hosts. Tucker Carlson had a woman on from China, and she was claiming that the Wuhan virus, this COVID-19 thing, was developed by the Chinese military and then released from that laboratory in Wuhan and then released to the United States as a military weapon, and that is false. I just want to tell you that it's unfortunate that Tucker Carlson has these people on the radio show, and I don't doubt that China has its viral virology program in which it has military virus weapons, etc. But the virus that we have been dealing with here since basically February, with all the shuts down and the lockdowns and the tests and the news and the forced vaccinations that they have coming, etc., all of this came from the United States, from a laboratory. It's in Detroit, a military-grade laboratory. And then it was taken to Wuhan under grant money that was in the United States. It was funneled to that laboratory to continue the research that ended up with this being released into the public. And that's why this clown Tony Fauci, that's with President Trump, this is the guy that caused all of this. He's the guy that brought the virus to Wuhan and then made sure that the money was there to continue funding it. He's the person who blocked hydroxychloroquine from being used as an effective remedial treatment for COVID-19. Fauci is you may as well just call this the Fauci flu, or I don't know, give it a name like that. That's the guy that's responsible for all of this, not some woman, coming from China who hardly speaks English, trying to blame it on the military in China, and not that they would not have had anything to do with it. I don't know. But the true track record of this virus was it came from U.S. military labs in 2016. It was outlawed by U.S. Congress, passed a law outlawing the development of these military-grade viruses. And then that was, they moved it from the United States laboratories to Wuhan and then moved the money behind the scenes to fund it. And a lot of the scientists from the United States were actually working in that lab in Wuhan. So for Tucker Carlson to have this woman come on and make a statement, some woman that hardly speaks English, that doesn't have any references or credentials in the United States, unfortunately that happened. So I have to correct that on this show. I want to talk a little about travel. And this is something, especially as I talk with students and parents, most of you cannot travel, but that's going to change. Someday in the not-too-distant future, we're all going to be able to travel again. But I personally have traveled a tremendous amount around the world, and I've had the ability to study and work with scientists in different countries of the world. But here's what I want you to do. One of my papers that's in my education course, the science education program that I have on my webpage, one of the papers involved there is the release. This happened in 2015, where I traveled to Peru. And I traveled to Machu Picchu. I went to Cusco, which is the head of the Inca Empire. And I drove by car. I went to Lima. And basically as a tourist, but ended up making some major discoveries regarding the Nazca Lines. That's N-A-Z-C-A, Nazca Lines. And I understood that these were basically antennas. And so anyway, that information is available on my paper, Nazca Lines, The Mystery Resolved. And so what I wanted to do, however, is talk about on my trip, I went to Lake Titicaca. Now, Lake Titicaca is the highest freshwater lake in the world, highest in terms of altitude. It's at about 13,000 feet. So what I want you to do in your travel expedition on the internet this week is go to Lake Titicaca. Go there on Google Maps. Go there and look up the information. And by the way, I'm going to tell you something right now. I'm going to repeat this probably every week. do not use Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a tremendously horrible disinformation site, especially when it comes to science. Wikipedia is one of the biggest disinformation sites when it comes to science. I'll just say it that way. Do not trust. Also, YouTube, do not go to YouTube for science. If you want to fix a bicycle tire or learn how to fix your toaster, or, you know, there are many other things that you can find on YouTube. But do not, I repeat, do not get your science or weather or anything like that on YouTube. It's all controlled disinformation, and the same with Wikipedia. Completely fabricated information there, especially when it comes to science. And okay, so let's get back to Lake Titicaca. This is on the border between Peru and Bolivia. It's a Lake Titicaca, like I said, the elevation of 13,000 feet. When I lived in Mexico City when I was young, that's at an elevation of about 7,000 feet. Denver, Colorado, is at an elevation of about 5,000 feet. So Lake Titicaca is almost three times the altitude of Denver. So almost 3 miles up in the air. But Lake Titicaca is a huge freshwater lake. But what was interesting, when we went there, there was an island, a floating island of reeds, and people live out there. These people have been living, and their ancestors have been living on this floating island in the lake of the middle of Lake Titicaca for forever. This goes back to the Incas. They are descendants of the Incas, still living the same way that the Incas did, building reed boats. And when you walk on the island, it's spongy. It's very strange. So you walk on the island and your feet sink in and you're like, oh, this doesn't feel safe. But the people have built little walkways and where somebody heavier like myself can go and walk. And so while I was there, this one family took me into their hut where they lived. And it was, once again, everything was made out of the reeds that grow on this island. And then the reeds are hollow, so they float. They also made big boats out of the reeds. But what was interesting is they told me that down deep in the lake, down at the bottom of Lake Titicaca, which is a tremendously deep lake, hundreds of feet deep, there is a city, an ancient city that is like built out of stone that's down at the bottom of the lake. And Jacques Cousteau, who is a filmmaker, he actually had a TV show that was a weekly show where they would go down in the ocean and explore, etc. Jacques Cousteau went there, and his divers went down and looked at the city. And anyway, that is an amazing discovery, that down at the bottom of that lake is an ancient city. We don't know much about it, but there's a lot of places in Peru that we just don't know anything about their history. If you look at the rocks that were used to build some of the big Inca cities, they are 70 to 100 tons of rock, finely machined and fit together like a glove in all of these odd shapes. So this week, for students, I don't care if you're in university level or kindergarten, this is something that can be taught at all levels, grade school, high school, etc. And understand that these people lived by building these immense rock structures. And today, if somebody were to contract, say with a contract, a building contractor, and tried to build these same structures today, they would not be able to do it. There's no known technique of working with rock. These are some of the hardest rocks known to man. In other words, trying to shape them and carve them and cut them would be nearly impossible unless you had some of the most expensive equipment ever conceived of by man, modern machinery, and it's still, you would not be able to build these in the same manner that the Incas did. So we really don't know how they built these, but at any rate, take a trip, and just to give you an idea, you can actually take a road trip on Google Map. When I went to Peru the last time, I went to Lima and rented a car. Now, it's not like a rental car in the United States where it's a brand new, nice car. It's an older, used car. And so anyway, in 11 days, I drove 3,000 miles. I went from Lima to Cusco, making a few stops in between, and then from Cusco to Lake Titicaca. From Lake Titicaca, I drove down to the Pacific Ocean coast and then drove up the shoreline all the way back to Lima. And in the end pictures of my paper dealing with the Nazca lines, I have a picture of the fish market that was there in Lima, Peru. The last night when I was there, I went to this fish market and they had a restaurant right there. So I have some pictures of the fish market. So it's incredible the amount of seafood that's there, and they make all these amazing seafood dishes. So at the end of that paper, I say, if you don't go for the archaeology and the vacation and the tourism, go for the food. They have a plate there called ceviche, which is a mixture of all the different kinds of seafood in a kind of a stew, which is truly amazing when you eat it. It's just beyond belief. But soon, hopefully within the upcoming months, etc., these places will open up to traffic and travel again. But for this week's travel assignment for students, go to Lake Titicaca. That's in Peru, between Peru and Bolivia. And take a look at that. Look at the topology. Look at the maps, etc., and understand that this is one of the most fabulous places. And also, if you have a little time, look at the place called Machu Picchu. That's another place I was at. And it was very interesting because the day I was there, it was perfectly sunny. There was not a cloud in the sky. And the guide who took me there and was explaining the history, etc., said that every day at Machu Picchu, it's cloudy. You always, 365 days a year, you have clouds, a lot of times very thick clouds and a lot of times rain. But that day was the only day he remembered. And this is a guide who had lived there all his life and who had, basically that was his business, being a guide. He said he'd never, ever seen a day like that in his life. So the day I was there, it was a perfectly blue sky. And of course, that's a high altitude also. You have to be a little bit careful of sun damage because the sun ultraviolet rays are so severe at that high altitude. Okay. I want to talk about, on my webpage, there's something else that I think would be very important for homeschoolers, and that is what I call the grow towers. Now, this is something that I was aware of before, but I wasn't aware of the extent of the educational information that is free with the manufacture of the grow towers. The information for classes, and this is accredited also, is you can actually get class credit. And so you might encourage your parents or your grandparents, if they're helping you, say, support your homeschool, to buy a grow tower system, one tower or three towers or even 10 towers. And the benefit here is that this is the future of agriculture. So I think it's very important for students, and I think it's very important for adults. If a lot of people are just completed a sale and shipment to a customer in the Caribbean islands of a commercial system, commercial grade grow tower system. So that involves 10 of the towers, plus all of the equipment, etc., that goes with it, and be able to grow lettuce and tomatoes and cucumbers and spinach and broccoli and celery and, all of the cucumber, tomatoes. Did I say those already? But you can grow these, and then also herbs, all of the different herbs. There's two sections that you can buy that you add to the towers where you can grow herbs. And so that's a package. Also, you can get them with grow lights so that you can, say, if you have it in a classroom setting, it comes with a timer, and then you just set the timer, and then it turns on and off. The pump that pumps the organic mixture, as far as the feeding the plants, that all comes with the product, including the seeds. And so it's a very good educational process. And this is the future. I'm sure that there are a lot of students that are going to come out of this that are going to create local businesses. In fact, there are all levels, grade school, high school, university level, groups and homeschools, individual families who've started this as a small business. And it's actually a good educational process to operate a business where you can sell the produce and actually help support the school, some of the expenses of the school, or if nothing else, have fresh vegetables. So this is non-GMO organic, and it's a very also clean setup, and it takes a little bit of electric power. It'll run on a single electric cord plugged into a regular wall socket. So it's something I just wanted to point out also, that I have two basically education programs then. One is my own science education program that's available on my website, and then also the Grow Towers. And of course, the Grow Towers are available for anybody, not only homeschooling, but also available in commercial grade packages, up to entire warehouse full of them, or greenhouse. And these are basically the agriculture of the future. This is basically the wave of the future as far as food is concerned. It's called urban gardening, or urban farming is another name for it, where you have very high yield, very low overhead, very clean. You don't have to deal with bugs and insects and mold and all of those things. You don't have that in this environment because it's very clean. It took me many years of looking around. I've had various products dealing with food, etc. And then I decided that the idea of growing crops in a controlled environment was necessary. And one of the reasons was because if you eventually go into outer space, and this is something that I want to encourage students to look forward to, because the privatization of space is occurring. And this gives people a chance, whereas with the old government programs with NASA, there would never be any chance that the average person would ever get into outer space. It just was not going to happen. In fact, they spent 50 years preventing people from going into outer space, regular people. But the question is, where are you going to get the food from? Well, you have this cycle, and it turns out that, this is very interesting, that romaine lettuce is one of the best converters. So you breathe in oxygen, you breathe out carbon dioxide. So if you're in an outer space environment, in a space station, for example, you have to convert that carbon dioxide back to oxygen. And at first, they had machines that would do that. It would take solar energy and break the carbon dioxide and bring back oxygen. But then you have the issue that you need food. And so there's a cycle. In fact, it's the same cycle that takes place on Earth, where you the person breathes in oxygen, breathes out carbon dioxide, and then the plant takes the carbon dioxide and breathes that in, respiration, and then breathes out oxygen. And of course, it's a much slower process. in plants. So for every person, you need a vast number of heads of romaine lettuce, which turns out to be one of the best converting plants for carbon dioxide, and it's also something you can eat. So it's something that it's a system that works well in a space station. So the end result is that what's the best way to grow romaine lettuce? It's in a grow tower. Instead of a plot of ground where you have one plant growing, now you have a tower where you have up to 44 plants or even more. Could have up to 48 or even up to 52 plants in a single tower. And then that's converting solar light and producing energy, so that carbon is going into the plant. To build the plant, the oxygen goes back into the air and the person breathes the air. So it's a system that works very well in a space station. And so that's why I became very interested in this. So it's like in your house, for example, the house is closed in the wintertime. You have the same situation where you don't have the windows open and you have a need for oxygen generation in the house. So a single grow tower with 44 romaine heads of lettuce growing at it is an excellent production center for oxygen. And so once again, you have the family breathing in oxygen, breathing out the carbon dioxide, the plant in the grow tower reciprocating the process. And so anyway, it's a simulation of what you would have in a space station. One of my projects, if you look on my webpage, if you scroll down a ways, it is the Space Hotel Launch System. And it's a method for launching big tubes into outer space, something that really nobody has ever done. And utilizing those tubes to construct a hotel with artificial gravity, etc. So anyway, that's on my webpage. But that's an interest of mine, is outer space and outer space exploration, and also creating large, basically space hotels, you call them, or living quarters, for upwards of 1,000 people in a single unit. And eventually, of course, like anything, we would get up to maybe tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people eventually. But that's another program that on how to expand outer space for civilian use and not for military. I've been asked recently to do commentary on the militarization of outer space, something that is a dead-end road. It can only lead to failure. And anyway, that's another topic. But my belief is that that outer space should be maintained for civilian populations, and all of these countries have to eliminate the idea of warfare. I just want to make a quick comment also. A lot of my effort is going to help students and families in this education crisis. But just look at what's going on, say, for example, in China. China has a very concentrated education program in science. They have an entire city dedicated to space exploration, where all of the scientists go and live. Russia, it's much the same, where they centralize. But the point is that they educate the students. There's a tremendous effort and discipline. They don't have cell phones. They don't have chat boxes. They don't have a YouTube video on the phone sitting there all day. They're studying. I met some students from Russia, and it was at a conference I was at, and these people happened to be their students, and so I was talking to them. And they don't even have televisions. They don't have televisions because it distracts their concentration on their work. Now, look at the United States, how far behind it's getting in the area of education, especially in the area of mathematics and science. It's something that's why I think it's very important for parents, especially, to recognize this deficiency. And students love science. Young men, young women, boys, girls. And the thing that I want to point out also is this is not just for students. This is for parents. What I'm trying to do is educate the parents, because If you're not aware, then it's going to be much more difficult to try and make your students aware, your children, whether they're at university level or kindergarten level. The thing is also you have to start at the kindergarten level and give them the opportunities, give them it's kind of like having a vision of where they're going to be in 20 years. And really, through government programs, our space heritage has really been stolen from us. In China, they're going to have hundreds of thousands of people in space. The same with Russia. Russia launches 2 or 3 times a day into outer space, big payloads, where we have literally nothing going into outer space. People in the United States don't realize how far behind the United States is in science and mathematics. That's why I'm concentrating my efforts on these teaching programs, etc. But also encouraging, one of the best ways to encourage students to study is to give them something fun to look forward to. And living in a space station with, the grow towers and growing their own food, if they start now in the house and understand that, say, how many romaine lettuce plants it takes to produce enough oxygen for a given person in that day, those are the kind of things that encourage them to learn so that someday they'll actually have a chance to go into outer space. I also think that students should have a business, or at least, even if it was like the Kool-Aid stand on the corner selling Kool-Aid for a nickel. I mean, I had a paper route when I was a kid, and I made, $5 a week. But it taught you something. It taught you how to manage money, how to count that out. You had to pay your bills. You had to manage your money. And that was, if I didn't have that, I would not have had any money. But the point is that now with the grow towers, you can actually start a business and grow something that is beneficial and understand that this is the future of agriculture and agronomy. So there's a lot of information on my webpage, jmccsci.com. The two programs I'm talking about is the homeschool science education supplemental package for K-12 and university level, and also the grow towers available for education supplemental packages, and that comes free with the grow towers. There's a tremendous amount of information there. So all of that on my webpage, and then also all of the other things, the wing generator. Once again, go to www.jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.